This is Paul Solentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, where today we have Steve Strain. Steve is in his sixth season calling Shocker Softball. He is the voice of Shocker Softball, and he's going to help us preview a big weekend series against UCF. Let's set the stage a little bit. UCF, they're ranked 15th overall. They're 42-11. They are 14-1 in the American Athletic Conference, one game up over the Shockers. And the Shockers moved into some top 25s this week. They are number 25. Wichita State, 31-13. They are 13-2 overall. So we will decide a lot this weekend. American Athletic Conference title is on the line. Shockers need to win 2 out of 3. Shockers could also help their NCAA at-large resume because UCF has an RPI that is in the top 20. So, Steve, let's start by breaking down the Knights. This is a contrast in styles. What should fans know about UCF and how they win softball?
Largely by their pitching, a collective 2.2 earned run average, Paul. So this is the old immovable object versus irresistible force. You have one of the best offenses in all of the nation in Wichita State, 354 team batting average, a collective 693 slugging percentage against a pitching staff for Central Florida that's really good. Again, 2.2 is their combined team ERA. They've also got two pitchers, Gianna Mancha and Kama Woodall, who have combined for 33 of their 41 wins, whereas you look at Wichita State, they've spread it around a lot more amongst pretty much three players. Central Florida has two really good ones that are 33-6 combined between those two I just mentioned. So something's got to give this weekend. Will it be the great Central Florida pitching that gives way to the Shocker bats, or vice versa? It's going to be a fun series. I'm really excited.
So UCF is more of a speed team. They hit doubles. They have, I think, 13 triples, a few home runs. So it's not like they have no power, but different than Wichita State. What's the challenge for Shocker pitching to keep Wichita State in the game?
I think one of the things will be not to be distracted by their speed, because you touched on that. 80 stolen bases for Central Florida in 93 attempts. So they are very aggressive on the base paths. Contrast that to Wichita State, of course, great power numbers. They've got 46 stolen bases this season. So Central Florida steals bases almost at a 2-1 rate to Wichita State. And that can be a distraction, I think, if you're a pitcher, knowing that at any time, you know, they might be trying to put the steal on or something like that, especially young ones like Allison Cooper. So don't get distracted by the base runners. Just do your thing, which she has done a tremendous job of. They all have in the last month or so. And then rely on your defense behind you, which has been pretty good. And obviously hope that you get those 6, 7, 8 runs a game that they've been putting up.
And that's been an interesting thing to think about, and talk with pitching coach Presley Bell about this a little bit. As the pitching staff has improved, getting pitchers to, you know, the phrase they always use is trust your stuff, from the standpoint you can give up 4 runs, you can give up 5 runs with this offense behind you. What you can't do is give up 8 runs. So you kind of have to be in the mindset, all right, I don't have to be perfect. I can give up a couple runs, but I can't give up 4 runs in an inning. How difficult is that for a pitcher to kind of get to that spot where giving up runs is okay as long as it doesn't get too out of control?
Yeah, and I think the thing that it can do when you do give up some runs, especially, again, if you're a young pitcher like Cooper is that can rattle your psyche a little bit. So just stay composed and know that you're, first of all, even before we get to your offense, is probably going to support you, your defense. Wichita State, 34 errors this season, Paul. Their opponents have committed 63. So they're doing a great job defensively, less than an error per game. Even Central Florida, really good team, they've committed 50 errors this season. That's 16 more than Wichita State. So this is a very good defensive team. So not only do you have an offense that can back you up, you've got some good defense behind you. So yeah, if you do give up a few runs, stay composed, don't get rattled, and just continue to focus on the task at hand. And they've done a good job of that again in the last month or so.
This has been an interesting series over the last 4 years as Wichita State's become a member of the American Athletic Conference. Two teams that are generally at the top of the conference, contending for the title. Both of them were NCAA regional teams last year, made it to the final round there. So Wichita State leads this series 10-1-1 over the last, we're now entering the fourth season that they've played softball because they didn't play last year. But it feels a little bit closer than that. The Shockers have dominated, but there's been, I think, two walk-off games, maybe more, a lot of one-run games. Tell us about the series. Why has it been so interesting and closely contested in many cases?
Well, I think it's a lot like what we're seeing with these two teams, because Central Florida has had some teams that have pitched so well, they're always going to be in games. And then that's what's kept them in over the last few years. It's funny because you think about South Florida when you think of pitching, and Georgiana Corrick, one of the best in the nation. In fact, she's on that the top 10 finalists now. They've narrowed it down to, like Sydney McKinney is for the Division I Player of the Year. She's on that list from South Florida. And so that's instantly who you think of. But actually, as a team, Central Florida has been getting it done now for a few years. And, of course, Wichita State is known for their offense. So I'm excited about Friday. Can't wait for that first pitch at 6. Weather's going to be great. It's just going to be a lot of fun.
What's at stake for Wichita State from an NCAA at-large perspective?
I think quite a bit, because I just read some reports where maybe they've crept in on the inside of the bubble. With what they've done recently, 11-game winning streak. But if they, say, maybe only win one of these three games, I certainly can't see them getting swept, although it's possible, then yeah, that could get them from the inside of the fence to the outside. Conversely, if they win at least two, then I think that they probably have solidified themselves inside of it. Of course, there's still the conference tournament, so there's still some opportunities to help or hurt yourself even after this series. But I think if they get two wins here, that will go a long way towards increasing their already good chances of being a bubble team if they don't win the tournament.
So if we're looking at the NCAA RPI today, UCF is number 16. So this is really a good chance for Wichita State, as you said, to pick up a couple wins that would really help. Wichita State is number 40 in the RPI, which is kind of where it's been the last few weeks, kind of hanging around there, winning games, but haven't been playing great opponents, so they really have not moved up a lot. And if we start to look at who is Wichita State beaten, Illinois is number 30, Charlotte is number 34, so a couple wins over UCF would really help that, would really help that strength of power ranking.
Yeah, I mean, two wins, think about it. It gives them the regular season conference championship, and it probably solidifies their position as an at-large team. So that's definitely, I know, the magic number that Christy Breadbender has in mind. You want to win three. Maybe they will. They're certainly capable of doing it. But if they can look at Sunday night or Monday as they look back and see that they won two games, I think they'd have to feel really good about their chances of moving on into the tournament.
Hi, this is Rick Miuma, president of Wichita State University. Check out the latest episode of the Forward Together podcast. Each episode, I sit down with different guests from Shocker Nation to celebrate the vision and mission of Wichita State University. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You mentioned Allison Cooper. She's one of the pitchers that have really picked it up here in recent weeks for Wichita State. Caitlin Bingham and Aaron McDonald have also had some really nice outings. What have you seen from that pitching group over the last two or three weeks that has been a big improvement?
Just their location. My first look at them in person was the Tulsa series at the start of conference play, and it didn't matter who it was. I mean, and I saw them all. I saw Cooper. I saw Bingham. I saw Aaron McDonald, and Paul, they were falling behind hitters time after time after time. They were having to throw strikes, and they were either walking hitters or they were having to throw strikes and giving up balls right out over the plate, and Tulsa was taking advantage of it. They're really erratic. Or you might see the Shockers offensively go put up three or four runs, and then they would come out defensively and walk the leadoff hitter. Just things that, I know drives coaches crazy. Well, that's all turned around now. They're getting ahead in the count. They're throwing first pitch strikes a lot more often, and they're giving themselves, they're putting themselves in good leverage positions as pitchers where they don't have to throw that strike. They can get ahead 0-2 or 1-2, or they can maybe waste a pitch and try to get a team to fish for something, nibble a little bit. And so I think that's been the main thing, is they've been getting ahead in the count, and they've been in high leverage positions instead of putting the hitters in that.
So the 11-game winning streak, which coincides with a lot of this pitching improvement, started with a 2-1 win down at South Florida. Allison Cooper pitched a four-hitter, and they beat significantly Georgina Coric, who is the probably the best pitcher in the American Athletic Conference, as you mentioned. What stands out of that game? Why did it turn into such a turning point for the Shockers?
Because they didn't have the offense behind them because Coric was so good. I mean, they only scored two runs in that game, and they only got five hits. Now, when Wichita State only scores two runs and five hits, you know, you're going to instantly think that's doom and gloom for that game. But it wasn't, because she was so good. And here's something else that we talked about also. She only struck out two in that game. She gave up four hits but only struck out two. So she was allowing South Florida to put the ball in play, but she trusted her defense behind her. But that, to me, yeah, that was the turning point for her. I think that's the first game of this 11-game winning streak. So I think that also helped turn this team around from having a really good season to a great season. But I think it also rubbed off on the entire staff, because McDonald has been really good since then as well. And she was a little erratic prior to that. I don't know if it maybe was a case of not wanting a freshman to come in and show you up or what, but Erin McDonald has been a different pitcher since then. It's kind of the same thing. I mean, she's just had much better command, getting ahead in counts, and doing a better job of getting people out.
Yeah, she has pitched well even in the loss against a very good Oklahoma State game, and then has been good since. Let's look through some of these 11 wins. They swept Houston, won a game 10-1. Run ruled Kansas, only gave up a run. I believe that was Erin McDonald again against Kansas. And then Memphis came to town. They swept them 10-1, 14-3, and 19-0. And then this weekend, or last weekend at ECU, gave up one run, four runs, and one run. So the pitching staff has really, really clicked into place here the last 3 weeks for the Shockers.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think also a big game, Paul, was that final game of the Houston series down there. They had to play catch-up and come from behind to win that game 7-6. That was the last game of that series because it was Easter weekend. But we wouldn't be talking about an 11-game winning streak had they not come from behind late and won that game. And so I think that was also something that's been a positive for this team, you know, because they haven't been in that situation much, because they've been blowing people out at such a high level. But they had to play come from behind there, and they did. And I thought that was another nice little shot in the arm for this team to, not that they didn't know that they could do that, but they proved it to themselves that, hey, even if we're down late, we can overcome this and turn it into a win.
And in that Houston game, Erin McDonald started. She struggled. Allison Cooper came in. She struggled. And then Caitlin Bingham came in and pitched really well in relief, 4 1/3 innings, which brings up something I know the coaches have talked about all going back to the fall, kind of the mixing and matching, the contrasting styles. What have you noticed about that? How do those pitchers complement each other, where you can get into a game like that and use them in relief, use them over a weekend in relief to, you know, to disrupt the hitters?
Well, I think that it's great. It, not just their styles might contrast a little bit, but their experience, because Cooper is the freshman, whereas you look at Bingham and McDonald, and of course they've been around for a little while. Erin McDonald, in fact, started playing in 2018, she started her career at Louisiana Tech, only appeared, I think, in three games and won all three of them. But nonetheless, you've got a lot of experience with McDonald and Bingham. So that was a case where they were able to pick up somebody like, or at least Bingham did pick up Allison Cooper, who struggled. So I think that experience, and then they've pitched in big games too, McDonald and Bingham have. You know, you look at some of the postseason runs that this team has been on. So I think that, as much as anything, is something that helps them, is if one of them is struggling because of the experience that McDonald and Bingham have, especially, you know, they could be there to pick the others up if things don't go right because of their experience.
So Shocker offense, of course, will be very important this weekend against an excellent UCF pitching staff. Shockers have hit 109 home runs. They're batting .354. Their slugging percentage is .693. So this is, once again, just a great offensive team. And I don't know if everyone expected that after, you know, last season was a great hitting team, but lost some significant contributors. Madison Perrigan, Riley Buck, Bailey Nickerson, Kaylee Hecker. Why has the offense maintained at such a high level, replacing those prominent people?
Well, I think that it's part of the leadership of a Sydney McKinney understanding what they lost, and it was going to be up to her to try to keep this team afloat offensively. And boy, has she done that! And you know, one thing that Christy Breadbinner has done with a .490 hitter is she's got her in the leadoff position. A lot of times, you might see the best average hitter per average is hit out of the three spot, and then the power hitter is behind her. Well, she's got McKinney one and Barnard two. And I think that, to answer your question, that just tremendously sets the table for this team offensively. When you've got those two starting off the first inning and maybe, you know, more after that, just an incredible way to get an inning started with her. And so I think putting her at the leadoff spot has helped a lot, and Barnard right behind her with her 30 home runs out of the two hole. Not something you see a lot of at any level. But having those two 1-2, I think, has just been an incredible table setter for this team to start off first innings and some beyond that as well.
So you've had a front row seat to watch those two, Sydney McKinney, who plays shortstop, Addison Barnard, who plays right field, and they are well on their way to two of the greatest softball careers Wichita State has had, two of the greatest careers, you know, in the conference, whatever. There's almost no limits you can put on the numbers that they're putting up. What have you noticed about them? How would you describe Sydney and Addison to maybe a fan who is going to come and check them out for the first time this weekend? What makes them tick?
One of the things that, well, McKinney is just so steady, first of all. One thing I've noticed about her, though, Paul, she's only struck out 11 times all season long. She has 77 hits, and she struck out only 11 times. So that's 157 at-bats, and only in 11 of them she struck out. And I think she's a great two-strike hitter, too, because when she gets two strikes, I'll always update myself on where she's at in the season for strikeouts. But she hardly ever does it because she protects the plate really well. She's able to go the other way. So she shortens up even with two strikes and still does a good job of protecting the plate, maybe sends it to left field. So she doesn't seem to panic with two strikes. And she puts the bat on the ball and hits it hard. And usually it's not at somebody. But I think she's a great two-strike hitter, and she doesn't get fazed by being down in the count. And she can hit the ball to all fields with a little bit of pop, too. I mean, we don't talk a lot about her home runs, but she's got 12, and that's about fourth on the team. So just a very good, steady presence. And then, again, a great table setter for Barnard to hit 30 home runs. She's going to drive home some, too, as well, because there's a good chance that McKinney is going to be on base as well. Barnard, one thing that we don't talk a lot about is her batting average is .427. I mean, 30 homers and 75 RBIs and a slugging percentage above 1,000. It's just ridiculous. But she's hitting above .400, well above .400. Just a tremendous 1-2 punch up at the top of the lineup.
And I know in the fall, when you would talk with the coaches, they would say Addison needs to be prepared for, you know, a challenging season. Pitchers were not going to give her good pitches to hit. She no longer had great home run hitter like Madison Perrigan behind her, you know, and there were some tough moments in the fall, from what I understand. She's just been excellent, even in all those circumstances. Why? What has she been able to adjust to continue to hit at such a high level?
Well, she's just a tremendous talent, first of all. But one thing that I think also can answer that question, Paul, is something that we probably don't talk enough about, and that's who's behind her. The Lauren Lucases, the Neely Herrings, the Zoe Jones. I mean, Jones is hitting .336, Herring .339, and Lucas is a .400 hitter as well. And they've got about 37 home runs combined between those three. So I think one of the things that's helping Barnard, in addition to being a tremendous hitter, you can't pitch around her because they're stacked behind her as well. I mean, this team is loaded 1 through 9. So, you know, a lot of teams might have a hitter like that, but then all of a sudden there's a significant drop-off. You might send up a kid that's hitting 300 with a few home runs. You can't do that with this team. You've got to continue to pound the strike zone because, you know, if you put her on base, there's a good chance the person behind her, one of them, is going to hurt you as well. So I think the supporting cast helps a lot in her case. But she's just a tremendous talent. She doesn't only hit home runs, Paul. She hits long home runs. I've seen her clear the scoreboard. She's gone to straightaway center and cleared that by plenty. I thought she was going to get one into the street one day and send it over into the parking lot of the baseball stadium. I mean, she just has tremendous power. So just what a phenomenal talent she is.
The home run that I really enjoyed was one of the two she hit against Kansas, where it did not appear she got really a good swing on it at all. She was kind of fooled or was, you know, swinging at a pitch that was not a great home run pitch, and she was just able to kind of flick it, muscle it, and it was a no-doubter. Just things like that are just been so entertaining to watch.
Yeah, I think I remember the one you're talking about, and the outfielder started to look like she was going to have a play on it, and then it just kept carrying. And that's just, again, going back to that power, though, that she has. She may not get all of one, but she's strong enough still to hit home runs. And I think it's a travesty that she was not on the top 25 finalist list for D1 softball. And, of course, now they've narrowed that down to 10, and I even think you would make a really, really good argument that she should be a finalist for the top 10. But for her to not even make the top 25 is really baffling. And I think that whoever did all that, if they had to look it all over and do it again, they would put her at least in the top 25. But she is just a tremendous, tremendous player. 30 homers, 75 runs batted, in a slugging percentage above 1,000, and she's hitting above 400.
And with her, and with, I guess, with Wichita State, with all these crazy offensive numbers, I keep going back to, and then they proved it, they've proven it over the years, but especially last year, they proved it wasn't the case of, you know, beating up on mediocre opponents or pitching. I mean, they have proven it at a pretty high level that these offensive numbers are significant against other good teams, which is why I would agree with you. Addison Barnard, boy, her numbers seem to speak for herself as far as it, you know, being a top 25 type of player.
Well, you know, we all know that every year this team hardly plays any home games until conference play. And the reason is because Christy Breadbender is taking them to different parts of the country and playing some very high-caliber teams. Now, they were supposed to play Arkansas back in mid-February. That game got canceled due to weather, but, you know, they've played Big Ten teams like Illinois. They did end up playing Arkansas later on down there in Arkansas, I believe that was. They've played Minnesota from the Big Ten. They played Nebraska. Of course, they get Oklahoma. They'll play every year with a home-and-home Oklahoma State. They're not afraid to play anybody. And I think that pays off this time of year, that they've played such high-caliber competition and done it on the road, too, where it's maybe not as easy. Those things pay dividends this time of year, and it makes you less afraid of any situation. It makes you more ready for the postseason. I think Coach Breadbender's done a great job sending this team the places she has, playing the teams that they have. Iowa comes to mind, a Big Ten team that they beat rather handily, by the way. Credit her for building a tough schedule for this team every year. It's hard. They're away from home a lot. But I think year in and year out, it's one of the reasons this team is so good this time of year, is because they've played so many tough teams.
Another good opponent of interest is Charlotte, which is top 35 or top 40 RPI, and they will be coming into the American Athletic Conference at some point. Shockers and Charlotte split two games in a tournament earlier this season. Reminds me a lot of Chris Lamb in volleyball, as the way he schedules.
Yeah.
Very aggressive. He's not afraid to go on the road. Has brought in some fabulous teams here to play in tournaments at Coke Arena, much like, you know, Shocker softball. You will get Oklahoma that will come in, Oklahoma State, some other schools like that. So, and I think it is paid off. You know, it paid off in 2018. Wichita State softball got an at-large bid, and that's not always easy to do in this situation. So I would say you are correct. You mentioned Neely Herring, who should be I guess, kind of a fan favorite by now. You know, she's one of the more experienced people on this team, has just been an excellent hitter going back many years. Tell us a little bit about Neely and what she has contributed to the whole arc of Shocker softball success.
One of the top 10 hitters all time in program history. Very steady. You know, she doesn't put up gaudy numbers like the McKinneys or the Barnards are in batting average or home runs. But you just look at her numbers, and it just shows, I think, Paul's steadiness. 339, 13 homers, and 36 runs batted in, 712 slugging percentage as well. So I think just steady. And same thing goes for her defense. She's only committed three errors. So just a player that Christy Breadbender can throw out there, game in and game out, and know that she's going to produce. And somebody that, like you said, has been around here for a while too, so she's got that experience. I think that that will obviously pay dividends for this team as we move toward the end of the regular season, on into the postseason as well. Just incredibly steady, I think, is the thing that comes to mind with her.
Yeah, really had a nice career. I think she and Caitlin Bingham are the two left from the 2018 team that went down to Fayetteville, beat Oklahoma State twice. Neely was a freshman then, played some in that regional, and then since then has largely been in the lineup almost every game, and has really been a nice hitter, a nice player for this team. We should talk about Lauren Lucas, who was kind of a reserve last year and has really jumped into a big role this season, playing in the outfield.
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind is how she ended one of the Memphis games on a throw to home plate. And by the way, a tremendous job scooping that one out and applying the tag as well for Lainey Brown, who's thrown into the lineup a few days earlier. But what a play that was. And again, she's another one that, I don't know if I touched much on her hitting, but she's hitting .411, Paul. So we don't talk much about her because of the other two that we've talked so much about. But .411, she's got a good glove, obviously. She's only got one error in center field, and she's proven to have a strong and accurate arm. Another one that is just very steady, solid all around, and somebody that Coach Breadbender can count on, whether it's with her bat or with her glove, that she's gonna produce. And what an addition to this program she's been.
Lauren is a sophomore. She played in 13 games as a freshman, and as you said, she's hitting .411. She's got 9 home runs. She's got 12 doubles. And when you start talking about who's going to replace Bailey Nickerson, who's going to replace the production from a Paragon, a Kaylee Hecker, a Riley Buck, Lauren Lucas and Zoe Jones at second base have really done a nice job with both of those.
If you took McKinney and Barnard off this team and took the other 7 in the lineup and put 2 other players in off your bench, that would be a really good team. That would be a really good offensive team because the supporting cast behind McKinney and Barnard is really, really good. They're just highly unheralded, but the rest of them are really, really good as well.
And Lauren Mills, with 12 home runs, has played a big role too. Yeah, you start listing off all these names and you see how deep that lineup goes, where you've got threats stretching way back into it.
And I like Wiley Glover out of the 9 spot because there's another one with a lot of experience, been around here for a few years. And you put her down at the 9 spot, and there's somebody that, you know, Coach Breadbender can help. I'll give you a good chance to get on base, flip it back to the top of the order where you've got the McKinneys and the Barnards that can bring her home. So I think she's a nice player to put down at the bottom of the lineup, hitting around .300 on base percentage, about .333. So one out of every 3 times, she's going to be on base for Sydney McKinney or Barnard.
Yeah, that's really important to get base runners on with those two people coming up. Let's wrap it up by zooming out a little bit. As you said, the Shockers routinely go on the road a lot early in the season. They're going to track down good competition in warm weather. When early in the season did you start to get a feel for this team? When did you begin to think that you liked the direction that they were going in?
You know, it's kind of a funny season because they started off ranked. You know, perhaps because of that difficult competition, perhaps because they might have dropped a game or two here that Coach Brett Benner would like to have back. They fell out of the top 25, and they, I think they tried to really find themselves for a while. But you just kind of know that come conference time, because of who they play, they're going to start to put it together. And this thing, you know, really obviously turned around with that South Florida series when Allison Cooper knocked off Georgiana Cork. And I even made the comment after she had two great starts that this team is probably just one really good pitcher away from going from a very good team to a great team. And that's what we've seen happen. And it was with that game when the pitching started to come around, this team has been another team. Because, you know, against the Oklahoma States and Oklahoma, those games did not go their way. And Oklahoma State handled them decisively. I'd like to see them play now, though, because I think with this pitching, this is a different team. They didn't get great pitching against Oklahoma State the first time. Then April 6th, they lost 4-1. But I'd like to see them play now, because I think the pitching this team has, they would be a much more competitive team against them and Oklahoma for that matter. Why not see if they can be pitted against the best? Maybe that'll still happen.
Okay. We've got Wichita State and UCF this weekend at Wilkins Stadium. Conference tournament is on the line. They start the series Friday at 6, and then they get back together 1 p.m. Saturday, noon on Sunday. Steve Strain will be there. Thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate your time.
Hey, enjoy it. Hope to see a packed house at Wilkins. If not, we'll have it on ESPN+.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos, no good. 1 second, it's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.